This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 601 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israeli attacks across Gaza targeted homes, shelters, medical clinics, and community kitchens and bakeries this week, as the recorded death toll since October 2023 surpassed 54,000, with thousands more missing and buried underneath the rubble. More than 400 Palestinians were killed this week alone. On Tuesday, May 27th, another grim milestone was reached as the Israeli army received the 800th delivery of weapons and military equipment by plane from the United States since October 2023, under both the Biden and Trump administrations. The Israeli government boasted that 800 U.S. cargo planes, along with 140 cargo ships, have delivered more than 90,000 tons of arms and ammunition, military gear, and other equipment to the Israelis over the course of this genocide. U.S.-made weapons were reportedly used in an attack on a school-turned-shelter for displaced families just days ago. In the early hours of Monday morning, May 26th, Israel bombed the Fahmi al-Jarjarwi school in Gaza City, engulfing it in flames. Maha Husseini and Mira al-Adam reported for Middle East Eye that people were asleep when Israel struck the building. Rescue workers and family members recovered the remains of more than 30 Palestinians, including 18 children, burned beyond recognition. A survivor of the massacre told the publication that, quote, "those who were awake and moving through the hallways were either burned or thrown by the blast," and that the Israeli military used at least three missiles in the attack. Another survivor, Mohammed Shaker al-Masri, told Middle East Eye that the missile's impact sealed the doors to the classroom where his relatives stayed. Quote, "they couldn't escape and were burned to death. Everything went black and pitch dark. We were asleep and only woke up to find the fire around us and the rubble above us. Flesh and body parts were everywhere," al-Masri said, noting that several family members, including his cousin's children, were killed in the attack. "Most of the rest are now in the hospital," he added. Holding a black bag in one hand, al-Masri was picking up the remains of victims strewn around in the wreckage, the reporters write. "I gathered these body parts from beneath the rubble, and there are still many remains left. My cousin was killed, and we still haven't been able to retrieve his body. All we're pulling out are small fragments," he told Middle East Eye. "We haven't found him. We only managed to retrieve his leg and these chunks of flesh, but the rest of his body is still missing." A four-year-old girl, Hanin Al-Wadia, was captured on video walking through flames, which had spread across the world. She is the sole survivor of her immediate family and is currently receiving medical care. She told reporter Wissam Shabat the story of how she woke up to find her uncle Hamza's body beside her, surrounded by flames. "To survive, Hanin had to walk through flames and charred bodies, unbearable trauma for a child her age," Shabat reported. Her uncle, nurse Ahmed Al-Wadia, confirmed to Shabat that Hanin's sister, Mimi, her mother, and her father were all killed in the Israeli airstrike. Hanin suffered second and third degree burns on her arms and legs and now carries both the physical scars and the nightmare of being the only one left, Shabat said. Another child, seven-year-old Warad, who narrowly escaped the flames, testified that her mother and all of her siblings were killed in the attack. Faris Afana, the director of emergency and ambulance services in northern Gaza, stated that when rescue workers arrived, three classrooms were entirely engulfed in fire, and he heard people screaming, but the flames were so intense that rescuers couldn't save them. He said, quote, "it was a massacre in every sense of the word. Charred bodies of children and women, charred corpses. It was a heartbreaking scene that I cannot put into words." Al Jazeera reported that the Israeli army used GBU-39 small-diameter guided bombs made by Boeing. The company markets this particular weapon, part of its Precision Engagement Systems missile suite, as, quote, a low-cost precision weapon system that provides a fourfold increase in sortie effectiveness. Al Jazeera's fact-finding Sanad agency said that, quote, multiple investigations have documented their use in targeting displacement camps in central and southern Gaza. Once launched from an aircraft, the bomb deploys its wings and uses a GPS guidance system to precisely correct its trajectory towards its target. It is also equipped with a warhead designed to penetrate hard targets, such as reinforced concrete or fortifications, before detonation. Al Jazeera added that images they analyzed from the site of the attack show that the bomb broke through the school's roof and the first floor before detonating on the ground floor, killing at least 36 people. On Saturday, May 24th, Israel carried out a massacre in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, targeting the home of two doctors and killing 9 of their 10 children. Dr. Alaa An-Najjar is a pediatric specialist. Her husband, Dr. Hamdi An-Najjar, is also a physician, and he was home with the children while she was working at the Nasser Medical Complex treating children. Hamdi's brother, who rushed to the site of the bombing as soon as he heard that his brother's home had been hit, told Middle East Eye that when he reached the house, Hamdi was lying motionless on the ground with his son beside him. The home was engulfed in flames. Quote, the children were completely charred, he said. Minutes later, he saw his sister-in-law, the children's mother, Dr. Alaa An-Najjar, arrive in horror. Quote, she had run on foot from the hospital to the house. 4 of her children were pulled out, charred right in front of her eyes, he said. He described the ongoing agony of not knowing the fate of 2 missing children. 7 children were pulled from under the rubble, and 2, Yahya, 13, and Sidra, just 6 months old, are still missing. We cannot find them. He said civil defense teams resumed the search the next morning but found nothing. Quote, their mother cannot even identify the bodies. The children are so badly burned, she cannot tell who is who. Dr. Hamdi and 1 child, 11-year-old Adam, survived. Donya Abusita, writing for Dropsite News, reports that, quote, the family of 12 has now become a family of 3, 2 of whom are in the ICU. The bombing does not stop. Families are being wiped out. The tragedies are unimaginable. The killing is relentless. The Gaza government media office stated after the attack on the An-Najjar home that, quote, the massacre was carried out without any reason or justification other than that killing has become a hobby and a pleasure for Israeli soldiers in taking the lives of innocent children. Amidst the massacres, the Israeli army is continuing to shrink the areas in which Palestinians live in Gaza. Israel issued new forced displacement orders to residents of Khan Yunis after 90% of the city area had already been put under expulsion orders last week. Other displacement orders were issued over additional areas in central and southern Gaza, covering about 155 square kilometers in total, according to the United Nations Humanitarian Office. These areas under current forced expulsion orders represent more than 40% of the Gaza Strip, which overlaps with previous displacement orders, the UN said. In North Gaza, the UN's partners report that sites for internally displaced people are nearly empty in the wake of Israeli displacement orders issued for areas in and near Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia. Doctors Without Borders stated this week that Israeli forces, quote, continue to systematically use last-minute displacement orders as a violent tool, turning the Gaza Strip, Palestine, into hell on earth for Palestinians. The group's logistics manager, Omar Al-Sakka, said, quote, our colleagues are desperate. There are no tents left and no space for people to set up. I don't know what to answer when colleagues ask me where they can go with their children in the middle of the night. We are running out of options to stay alive. These displacement orders and established no-go military zones now cover more than 80% of Gaza, and not a single area of Gaza has been spared from attacks, Doctors Without Borders added. This week, after nearly 90 days of Israel's forced starvation policy under a blockade that began in early March, Israel and its U.S. partners opened two of four so-called aid distribution centers, claiming they began a private effort to distribute aid to 2 million Palestinians. But as Palestinian and international aid agencies say, these sites are meant to further compound and provide cover for Israel's policy of mass starvation, while operating with ineffective, humiliating, and lethal procedures. On Tuesday, May 27th, Israeli and private American mercenary forces, under the auspices of the, quote, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, forced Palestinians to walk dozens of kilometers to reach a militarized zone in Rafah, surrounded by the Israeli army, then were herded like livestock through biometric surveillance corridors to receive one box of food items that barely covered basic needs, and, quote, without any clear system or dignity-respecting protocol in place, according to Euromed Human Rights Monitor, whose field researchers reported from the site. Euromed stated on Tuesday that, quote, Israeli forces deliberately degraded civilians by confining them behind barbed wire, while the U.S. managing company failed to provide even the most basic conditions to safely accommodate tens of thousands of people desperate for aid after over 2 months of total blockade. Many were compelled to walk long distances to reach a single aid point, where they were forced into humiliatingly narrow, fenced pathways, only to receive a meager food parcel before exiting through another highly restrictive route, an ordeal wholly devoid of human dignity or humanitarian sensibility, Euromed stated. Thousands of Palestinians arrived at the disorganized site and found total chaos there. The U.S. company and its guarding forces failed to control the situation, prompting intervention from Israeli troops. The mayhem resulted in an Israeli helicopter opening fire near the crowds and causing injuries, some due to stampedes, Euromed explained. At least 46 people were shot and injured, and 3 were killed. The volume of Palestinians at the site was so great that the U.S. team pulled back, saying it had relaxed security protocols briefly, quote, to safeguard against crowd reactions to finally receiving food, and claimed that Hamas had blockaded access to the site. The Gaza government media office rebuked those claims, saying on Tuesday that, quote, the allegation that the resistance imposed barriers preventing citizens from accessing aid is a complete fabrication that has no basis in reality and constitutes a dangerous deviation from the discourse of an organization that claims to be humanitarian neutral. The documented truth, documented by field reports and the Hebrew language media itself, is that the real reason for the delay and collapse in the aid distribution process is the tragic chaos caused by the mismanagement of the same company, which is affiliated with the Israeli Occupation Administration itself, in these buffer zones. This resulted in thousands of hungry people rushing out under the pressure of the siege and hunger, then storming the distribution centers and seizing food, interspersed with gunfire from the Israeli occupation. This all came on the heels of the abrupt resignation 2 days prior of Jake Wood, the head of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is registered in Switzerland and Delaware. Wood said that the group's plans could not be consistent with what he called the humanitarian principles of humanity, neutrality, impartiality, and independence. The Washington Post reported that the chief operating officer, David Burke, has also resigned. The United Nations, along with every other established international aid agency, has refused to abet the U.S.-Israeli aid trap. Jonathan Whittall, the head of the Office for the UN's Humanitarian Affairs for Palestine, stated on Wednesday that, quote, these events illustrate how the collective punishment of Palestinians continues and the assault on their human dignity is accelerating. The newly developed distribution scheme is more than just the control of aid, Whittall said. It is engineered scarcity. 4 distribution hubs located in central and southern Gaza, secured by private U.S. security contractors, where those Palestinians who can reach them will receive rations. One of these hubs is near the spot where Israeli forces killed and buried in a mass grave 15 first responders. For me, Whitall continued, this is a grotesque symbol of how life in Gaza and that which sustains it is being erased and controlled. The new distribution model cannot possibly meet Gaza's needs. Knowingly designing a plan that falls short of minimum obligations under international law is essentially an admission of guilt. The U.S.-backed entity that has been created to deliver on this plan institutionalizes Israel's restrictions on aid delivery from the outset. This is not humanitarianism. Humanitarian action would seek to reach all civilians wherever they are and would push back on measures to limit aid, instead of accepting these conditions up front. This new scheme is surveillance-based rationing that legitimizes the policy of deprivation by design, and it comes at a time when people in Gaza, half of whom are children, are facing a crisis of survival. Those were the words of Jonathan Whitall of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in a speech to the press on May 28th. The Gaza government media office stated after the chaos and killings at the Rafah distribution point that, quote, what is happening is conclusive evidence of the occupation's failure to manage the humanitarian situation it deliberately caused through a systematic policy of siege, starvation, bombardment, and destruction. The establishment of isolation ghettos and forced assembly lines amid the threat of death and starvation does not express a genuine humanitarian intention, the office added. Rather, it embodies a racist political engineering aimed at dismantling Palestinian society, perpetuating its suffering, and providing a false humanitarian cover for the occupation's security and military agendas, the media office said. On Wednesday, May 28th, the U.S.-Israeli company opened another distribution site west of Rafah, and again, Israeli forces opened fire and six Palestinians were killed trying to acquire a meager amount of aid. The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention stated on Wednesday that, quote, the U.S.-backed distribution of aid in Gaza using ex-military staff is a weaponization of food and a grotesque mockery of humanitarianism. This cruel spectacle is meant to distract from Israel's plans to forcibly displace all Palestinians from Palestine. Such action is as far away from humanitarian aid as one can go. We call it what it is, a tool of genocide. Meanwhile, Israel has this week been attacking community kitchens and assassinating humanitarian relief workers in what seems to be part of its plan to force Palestinians to depend solely on this private U.S.-Israeli mercenary company for any food at all. Last week on May 22nd, Israeli forces killed six aid workers and security guards in Deir el-Balah, according to the government media office, while they were working to secure two trucks of humanitarian aid and essential medical supplies and ensure their arrival to hospitals in the area. Armed gangs, enabled by Israeli forces, attacked the trucks and security personnel and began stealing the humanitarian aid in what appears to be the latest coordination between the army and local gangs, according to local media reports. As security forces tried to repel the assailants and safeguard the aid, Israeli warplanes launched strikes, killing the aid workers, Middle East Eye stated. The Gaza government media office stated that, quote, it has become clear that the occupation army is systematically working to enable the looting of humanitarian aid and medicine trucks and to ensure they do not reach their beneficiaries by targeting those who organize and ensure their safe passage. On Monday and Tuesday of this week, the Israeli military deliberately targeted 20 community kitchens and food distribution and storage sites. Al Jazeera said that, quote, most of the Israeli airstrikes took place in Gaza City and other parts of northern Gaza, an area that has not received any aid since Israel began enforcing its total blockade on the enclave in early March. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of As Long as Gaza Walks, It Refuses to Fall by Asma Abdu, writing from Gaza. Asma writes about walking through a changed geography of Gaza, brutalized and desecrated after 19 months of genocide. She writes, quote, "Among the destruction, I see some houses that are still standing, but only partly. The walls are cracked, roofs caved in, and windows shattered. Families who have nowhere else to go try to make their broken homes livable again. They hang fabric and old clothes over gaping holes in the walls, desperate for some privacy, for some sense of shelter. These makeshift coverings flap in the wind, a fragile barrier against the outside world. Before, these homes were places of warmth, filled with the smells of home-cooked meals, the sound of children's play, and the comfort of family gatherings. Now they are cold and broken, their residents living in fear of another strike that will bring the walls crumbling down completely. The streets remain filled with destruction, the markets with empty shelves, and the hospitals with patients who cannot be treated. Those who fled south seeking safety return to find nothing but the same tents, the same hunger, the same desperation. Even when aid trucks are allowed in, prices are impossibly high. How can people who have not worked for over a year afford food that now costs double? There is no rebuilding, no healing, no return to normalcy. The ceasefire was never meant to bring peace. It was merely a brief inhale before the next strike. Now, as the genocide has resumed in full force, once again, people wander the streets aimlessly. But this time they do not fear death. They fear life, a life that is no longer a life, but a relentless descent into hell. Yet they walk. There are no cars, no buses, no fuel, only the will to keep moving. Women in their traditional prayer clothes walk with faces marked by grief, but they still smile. Children carrying jugs of water on frail shoulders, their feet covered in dust, yet they press forward. I see men who have lost everything, families, homes, livelihoods, continue to put one foot in front of the other. Before the genocide, walking was an act of healing. Now it is a confrontation with pain. But as long as Gaza walks, it refuses to fall. Even through the ruins, Gaza walks on, and as long as we walk, we are still here." Those are excerpts from As Long as Gaza Walks, It Refuses to Fall by Asma Abdu, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. Asma is a project coordinator with the Samir Project, a humanitarian relief organization. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. A group of Palestinian bakers in Gaza sang while they baked bread after a trickle of flour entered Gaza last week. The lyrics of the song, titled "Where Have Our Days Gone," are as follows. "I cry for loved ones, the tears run down my cheeks. I swear, my friends, I'll never forget your days. Where have our days gone? Oh, where? Where did we spend them? They vanished in the blink of an eye. How sweet their memories. I sang from deep yearning, aching for the days of youth." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.